Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, this is Fran Lewis, and this is Romance Hot and Sizzle Wednesday. It's a brand new show on Literary Viewpoints, and we've got four of the best, famous, wonderful romance writers in the universe on this program. That's the truth. And then I've got me, who doesn't write romance, and, well, we never know. My doctor's waiting for me to write a good novel, so I'm going to get some pointers today. We've got Doris McCurry, Hippocrates, and her character was Dinah Carter, and she's going to tell us about him, and Anthony Farese. And, whoa, he's hot, let me tell you. Sizzle and pop on that one. And then a book that absolutely, if you love Lucy and Ricky and Ethel and Fred, He Loves Lucy by Ann Yost. Oh, my God. Lucy is so like me. That's why I like her. She wants to be a journalist, but she's outspoken, doesn't take any you-know-what from anybody, and she's my kind of person. And Sheriff Jake Langley, too bad. You haven't got a chance. What can I say? And then we've got, following his stint as a Marine during Vietnam War, James needs something beyond the mundane conformity of life in Vicksburg, Mississippi. We've got Larry Farmer, I Will Be the One. We've got a male perspective on this. This is going to be hot, let me tell you. And we've got the hottest author on this planet. We've got Kathy Barton. And Kathy is the author of, I'm reading this from my phone, and I never read on the phone, best-selling series Forces of Nature. And her work is a lot different than everybody else's. And she's got heart and spice, let me tell you. This is going to be really good. So, Larry, how did you create your primary character? And how did you create the chemistry between us? Because I think everybody wants to know about the heart and sizzle. They don't want to know about anything else. Well, we've got a whole bunch of listeners here. This is cool.
Well, the main character is me, so I wrote about myself, and I wanted to be a writer all my life, and so when I finally started taking it seriously, I started this off as a short story just to learn the trade, and then the story's about the Philippines. I was there when Marcos was overthrown, and I got to thinking in my short story, I didn't even bring that up. I was just a day in the life. And so I expanded it to a full-fledged novel based on my experiences in the Philippines in the last 2 years of the Marcos regime. I was there for the revolution, and there was insurrection, and all I had to do was remember and write it down.
Oh, my God. So, Anne, how did you create your character? Lucy, I love Lucy.
Well, Lucy's kind of a little bit like Larry. Lucy's kind of me. I was a journalist, and like Lucy, I went to college and studied a lot of different things that didn't qualify me for any kind of work. And like Lucy, I got a job through my dad at a newspaper, and so that was kind of it. And I liked her sort of scatterbrained thing, because people who are impulsive and exciting and enthusiastic are just interesting, and so that's how Lucy got going.
Yes, scatterbrained is good sometimes, because if you're two together, you'll begin to be boring and dull, I guess. I don't know. What about you, Doris? How did you create Dinah? She was interesting, too. I mean, these characters really kept me going, let me tell you.
Well, thank you. I think I first came up with Dinah because I had personally, too many bad dates. And I could just picture, being at a, party or being in an unhappy relationship and just praying somebody like Anthony would come up and start talking to me.
Yeah.
and hit on me. And I love her creativity. And I think I drew on some of the wonderful women in my life that I knew. And that's where Donna came
from. That is great. Kathy, how did you create your characters in your book? And
they're nothing like me, that's for sure.
Okay, that's okay.
I write paranormal, and they're usually about brothers, families, six boys usually. I have two of my own, and some of the antics that they get into are about, my kids and their spouses. Not the sex part or the shifting, but just, some of the things they say. Because the other part I don't even want to know about.
Well, I often wanted to you know, had to have telekinesis and be able to read people's minds, and I often would have loved to have shapes, you know, time shifting, so I could go back in time and do something different. That would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I have, you know, what can I say? How do you create the chemistry between them and then keep it on an even keel so that people? I mean, I'm very squeamish about certain scenes, so if a scene is too over the top, I just skip mm-hmm. over it. Mm-hmm. So how do you create the chemistry in your characters, and when they meet, how do you know how to arrange that in the scene, because that's something that a lot of new writers can't do, and how do you create the dialogue between them so that you know right away that either they're going to hate each other, love each other, or eventually. Larry, how do you do that? How did you do that in yours, because since you're the one that's the main character?
Well, the girl in the story was a real girl, and we did have a chemistry with each other. I did have to expand on it because we lived, like in the book, we lived several hours apart. Actually, only about an hour and a half apart, but it wasn't so easy to see each other, but we went out of our way to do it. There was just a natural chemistry. But for a novel, I expanded on it, and I wanted it down to earth. I wanted it believable, but of course you have to entice people, but a natural romance is automatically enticing if you can just get it, you know, get it across.
Yeah.
So I wrote on the reality, but also expanded, including other relationships I had or that I might have dreamed of. I mean, but in a realistic way, like you would really like to have this relationship with a girl. I just put it all together, and at the same time, from my perspective, thoughts about her, longing for, or anger, or, you know, just, I wanted it real but enticing.
What I really liked about all of the books is that the chemistry took time, and the relationship didn't happen in 5 minutes, which really made them more credible. So when you wrote Lucy and Jake, he had no chance, did he? How did you create that, the chemistry between them? And the poor guy, he was lost before he started, poor thing.
Well, I think it's a really good question because so often in books and even movies, you see the two people get together and there doesn't seem to be any reason why they you know, are gravitate to that person. And I've always felt like that was a really, really interesting question. Like, why did you marry the person you married and all of the rest of us? You know, how do those come about? It just seems so random. And with Lucy, I didn't actually think this through. It was just intuitive. But, you know, she is longing to be considered a mature and competent. And, of course, he already is. And he, on the other hand, is a little too staid and a little too, you know, ordered in his life. And so she just brings a lot of light and color into it. And so I felt like there really is kind of a reason for this attraction. Otherwise, you know, chemistry, you can't always explain it. I mean, sometimes you're just drawn to somebody and you just can't really explain it. But I think you have to try to make it, you know, a little bit realistic and have some reasons behind it.
Well, Doris, Anthony is really a strange character. And Dinah, you know, loses her husband. So what happens that draws them together? Because basically she's drawn to his partner, to Greg Patterson first.
Right. Yeah, because they were friends, but I just love the immediate connection. I like to write about two people who really, you know, even though they're separated by circumstances, there was still a spark, there's still something there that they find really attractive about that person. And Anthony and Dinah have a lot in common, but yet there are a lot of differences as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, love the process of working through that to, you know, to culminate in, you know, the ending relationship.
While we're on the subject, I would like to add one little thing. I had to decide, did I, you know, about, let's call it a romantic scene, even including sex. I did not want to my taste, I did not want to delve into a sexual scene. Mm. But I did want people to, you know, identify with what's happening or going to happen. And then I just kind of left the rest to the imagination. But that was to my choice.
Well, that was why I liked it.
a lot of people did.
To be
a
very
honest,
I liked it.
I think that it's better that way, to leave, you know, some things to the imagination, to kind of run
it's
with
hard
it
to
in your mind.
It's hard to know where to draw the line, too, because, you know, most of the romance literature now is pretty explicit. And I wrote Lucy about 10 years ago, and the books I'm writing now are mysteries, and they don't have that explicit sex in them because I just got uncomfortable writing it.
Right. I have friends like that, too. That's why I chose to do it the way I did it.
Yeah.
Well, they were, well, Kathy, how do you write your scenes? Because yours is different.
Sex scenes? The sex scenes?
Those are the ones that everybody wants to know about.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I just,
we're all drawn to that.
I just, you know, let the muse kind of flow with it and then hope it. I mean, seriously, I just hope it just turns out so that it's not filthy sex. It's just consensual sex between two people who end up together.
That is. I'm going to have to read one of them. I don't normally do, but I will have to read one of them, seriously. You know what? They sent me 50 Shades of Grey to review, and I 50 Shades of Grey to my sister-in-law who wanted to read it because I didn't want to read it. That's the first time I ever turned down something to review. I just didn't think it was necessary. There is a plot there, by the way, but I just felt that that wasn't my kind of book. So how does your title come in? You read it?
I read about 100 pages of it, and I thought it was just so boring I didn't finish it.
Oh, wow.
Well, I started
to
read the back cover.
I didn't even have a romantic scene in mind, and I felt like in order to get published, I felt like I had to add more, you know, in order to get to that point. And it's like, but I've been told it's tasteful, so, and that's what I was working for. But, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it either if I didn't feel like
I could. I couldn't deal with it, and my niece read the first chapter to me over the phone, and I go, that, and they did send it to me, and I go, like, I don't think so. So my sister-in-law, it was a funny story, because I sent it to my sister-in-law, and somehow my nephews got hold of them, and they thanked me. They're older, so I just cracked up laughing. So, Kathy, you have two new titles. Tell us about Ellis of Emerson Wolves, and on the 19th you said you have Reardon of Harris and Ambush coming out. So tell us about those characters, because I don't know enough about your writing.
Ellis is the fourth book in the Emerson Wolves series. As my genre is, they're wolves, and they shapeshift, and Ellis is, he's kind of a hard head. Doesn't listen to his family, and he thinks that his way is the only way, as usual. But the two of them come together pretty good. Riordan, he's a tiger shifter, and he's the head of his family, and he finds his mate. He's not real happy about it, so he goes to confront her, and she just happens to run a pastry shop, and she pellets him with pastries when he comes to tell her how things are going to go.
my question is also to Kathy, one more is, I don't know how do you create the dialogue between these two people to keep it real, that it's people want to read it? I that's the only thing I have trouble when I'm writing in a narrative, and I have trouble with dialogue, and how do you know what they're supposed to say?
You know, it's like what you said, you keep it natural. You say things that you know you would say. Like, if someone comes up to you and said, I don't know, for instance, they said to you, you and I are going to stay together the rest of your life. Well, you're not going to take that sitting down, and you would just say exactly what you would say to them. And that's how my characters are. And that's how they start out with conflict. And the conflict is usually because one of them is arrogant and the other one is stubborn. So, and I just use dialogue that I like. I speak, or my kids speak.
So it's
Can I speak on the dialogue question? Because I think that's
I'm taking notes as you're writing it, as you're saying.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you're trying to write and you're having trouble with dialogue, that's. You know, there are a lot of things to think about with that, and I think you know, once you're into the characters' heads, there is a, like Kathy said, there's a lot of intuitive, you know, you just kind of use things that you would say or somebody you know would say, or you try to think in that character's head. But one thing you want to really avoid with dialogue is getting to be too everyday about it, because it's not an everyday dialogue. It's not like you meet somebody on the street, hi, how are you? You know, you want to avoid that wallpaper kind of dialogue and get to stuff, have every exchange be interesting.
No cliches.
Yeah, none of the just, you know, small talk. Small talk you don't want to bother with because people don't want to read that.
No.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's
the way
that's
read anyway. It's to escape.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if it gets too much, people skip over it. Or if there's too much setting, they skip over that also. I mean, I think I've read over close to 5,000 books and reviewed them in the last 5-6 years. Seriously, I'm keeping track. It's scary.
Yeah.
And the ones with the most, the dialogue gets too much. I'm like, I don't really care what they say to each other. It's annoying.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
And it depends on where you also decide to have your book. Like Larry, you decided to include the Vietnam War as part of your novel. How come you chose that particular time period?
Well, I'm from the Vietnam era, and I enlisted in the Marine Corps. I quit college and enlisted as a private in the Marine Corps, turned down OCS and everything, because the Vietnam War kind of defined my generation. And I was involved in it politically and everything. I was a patriot, you might say. And I don't mean that to sound derogatory, and that I do know that people that protested the war were patriotic also, but I will say some were not. There were a lot of overkill. Anyway, it got my attention. It made me want to get involved, and I enlisted even as a political statement. I want to go to the Vietnam War. So the war was over, and you have to think about it, the effects on the country, the effects on yourself, etc. So I'm still keyed into politics and history even after the Vietnam War, and I was finishing my master's degree. And just as a side note, a lot of the people getting my master's had come back from the Peace Corps, and they really loved it. And I thought, boy, you know, that sounds kind of nice, but I wasn't really interested. People kept bringing it up, and I tokenly put in an application form. And then I was picked up and assigned to the Philippines right after I heard about the Benigno Aquino assassination. I don't know if anybody knows this name. You probably have heard of Cory Aquino. He was her husband. He was a political opponent of the dictator Ferdinand Marcos. He was assassinated. So it's almost like I was reliving the Vietnam era, but on a smaller scale basis. Nobody cared about the Philippines, really. But it got my attention. And when I was over there, the insurrections were happening. The Cold War was still going on. We had military bases over there. It really got my attention, and it was almost like an aftermath inside of me of the Vietnam War. I'm out in the rice paddies, but this time in the Peace Corps, not the Marine Corps. I'm watching people right in front of you turn radical communists because they hate the dictator that America's propping up. I mean, all this is unfolding in my eyes, and I loved it. I mean, I was alarmed by it. I wanted to do something about it. In the case of the Philippines, the glory part was there was Cory Aquino. There was the Catholic Church. I'm not Catholic, but they were glorious during then. A man named Cardinal Sin, I got to meet him. He held audience with me one-on-one after the revolution. And there was an alternative, is my point. And you did not have to choose between a dictatorship and a radical communist insurgency. They both existed, but there was sanity as a choice, and it was a peaceful revolution. Anyway, that's how I included Vietnam in all that. Vietnam was still in me. I was still living it, and it was almost like a different verse of the same song inside of my mind.
Wow. Doris, how come you decided, this was really what set me going in the book, because I wanted to know who did it. Why did you decide to kill off Dinah's husband? And she felt guilty because she sent him out to get the cake, and then she felt like it was her fault that he died. But obviously whoever it was going to get him anyway, it didn't matter. What I love about this one, and I love about He Loves Lucy, is that they will have mysteries and murders, and that's my thing, mysteries and murders. I love them.
Yeah.
So how come you decided to create a romance mystery writing murder mystery?
There's always one of my characters ends up dead, usually, in my books. And
I love that.
I wanted Hypocrites to be as interesting to the readers as I could make it. And by killing David off, I mean, it just added so many more layers and so much more conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I loved when she, you know, she thought, you know, her second marriage, like, who did I marry? What have I done, you know? And I just wanted it to be as intense as it possibly could. And I think it just helped add so much layer and so much more story to it.
Oh, I thought that was really good. And in your book, Anne, Lucy manages to create, she creates chaos wherever she goes, which is great.
Right.
And how did she manage to trick everyone to get that job as a newspaper reporter, and she wanted to cover the murder? That was really clever. I would do something like that, seriously.
Yeah. Well, I like Doris, I like having a mystery as part of the story. I like mysteries, too. And, in fact, I used to just read mysteries, and the romance thing was kind of a thing, you know, brief thing for me, and now I'm back to mysteries. But I think it enriches the story to have something, other big thing going on. So it's not just back and forth between the guy and the girl, and it's not all angsty. And so I knew she was going to end up being a reporter covering a murder before I started. I don't really outline, but I knew that there would be something. And and like Doris, I feel like it just gives you a lot more depth, because you can put the characters in danger, and you can put the characters, you know, like in He Loves Lucy, Lucy and Jake wound up getting stuck together in a snowstorm, and so that kind of forced the whole physical thing, you know, to happen. And you need some motivation for it. I mean, he's trying to stay away from her, so you need to put him in a situation where, you know, it's real hard to stay away from her. And so that's kind of the basis of the mystery.
Well, she's a recurring character, I hope, because definitely she's got more to do. And she's
It is part of a 3-book series. It's about her whole family. Her other two brothers are in the other 2 books, and so she's in there too.
Oh, you need to send those to me.
Oh, I will be happy to.
Seriously, I'm dying to read what's next. And because these are, oh, by the way, because they have large print people. Anything with a font bigger than 1 gets to the top of the list. I've got a pile of about 40 books inside, and the ones that are the shortest with the largest print, they move right up to the top of my list.
Yeah,
I
understand.
That these are really good, seriously. I don't know why I had trouble posting the reviews on the website for Wild Rose Press. I don't know how come. Every time I try to do it, they tell me I don't know my password. So I posted them everywhere else, and everywhere else, all over the place on my author site. So, Kathy, how do you create suspense? Do you have suspense or murder or anything like that in your novels?
Both, yes, in all of them.
Oh, good.
In one series, I had it a running series where from the beginning to the end, there was a mystery that had to be solved, and it finally did. But I don't do that very much anymore, because I like to have kind of a standalone book. I mean, there's still mystery and everything in it, but I like it when the books can be read in not order, if you want it to.
Yeah.
You've got to send me one, too. Before I forget, because I don't forget anything. My husband can't stand it because I forget nothing. tomorrow, I could tell you what he wore on my first date 19 years ago, seriously. And I could tell you what he ate. It's bad.
I have problems with women that remember too much, too.
I know, Larry, and we never let
you forget either. Bad joke. I'm sorry. Had to get that in from a male perspective.
That's why I'm glad you're here. Tomorrow morning at 10, internationally famous, award-winning author John Land, Strong Light of Day. Book is fantastic. He's amazing.
Wow.
And I met him. I was invited to the Thriller Fest, so I got to meet all these people. It was really cool. But I think the greatest honor that I'm going to have is in 2 weeks, on October 29th. I hope people listen. We're doing, Herbie Pilato is the founder of Classic TV. And if you look on Facebook, he always has the Throwback Thursdays because he knows everyone from Family Affair to Happy Days to Barbara Eden to everywhere. We're doing a special tribute to the memory of Elizabeth Montgomery. And we're going to do a special tribute to Bewitched. And, yeah, he asked me to do
it. Show.
And I read Twitch Upon a Star, and I've got a whole bunch more to read on other stars. We're going to talk about Barbara Eden, Mary Tyler Moore, and everyone. So that's going to be fun. And he asked me to specifically do it. And, okay, that's going to be fun. So, Larry.
October 29th.
October 29th at 10 in the morning. As a matter of fact, 10 in the morning, and at his time, it's 7. I didn't realize he was in Pacific time. And on November 3rd, this is, I just like, I'm flipping out, Catherine Coulter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. She's a biggie.
She asked for the interview, and I was like, oh, my God, she loved what I wrote. Thank God. She's amazing. I met her at the Thriller Fest. She's really very nice. Sandra Brown is very, they're all very nice. Nelson DeMille is a riot. They're just really nice people.
Yeah.
So if you write mystery thrillers, you guys need to come next year. I hope I get invited again. It was really cool.
Yeah.
So, Larry,
oh, yeah.
Tell us about Lois and James, and why is their connection special?
Well,
and
they came from... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
What I really liked about it, once again, based on a real relationship, though I Hollywooded it up also, is that we were from two diverse backgrounds. I'm a Southerner, a conservative Southerner, off of a cotton farm. She was from the big city up north, Cleveland, and she had different kinds of outlooks in the world than I did. She would have never joined the Marine Corps. I almost didn't join the Peace Corps, that kind of thing. We were opposite enough to be interesting if you have enough in common to reference the commonality and expand yourself. And we opened each other up quite a bit. We were willing to, for one thing. We were not stubborn in our ideologies or outlooks. And it was a natural fit, and we really got off to each other. And our differences made it more interesting, more intriguing. We wanted to know more about the world. That was one of the reasons we were in the Philippines, halfway around the world, and part of our new world was people from diverse backgrounds and with chemistry, which was our vehicle. And we talked about life. We talked about our observations that we were living. And in her case, she was a very brave girl. And she faced more dangers than me, I think. I mean, I was kind of used to it. I'd been in the Yom Kippur War in Israel, and I'd been in the Marine Corps and things
really?
Like that. And I'd been through the Khyber Pass. So what I'm saying, some of my quote-unquote dangers I kind of took for granted. But in her case, I really do think she faced more danger than me. And she was this little white girl in a third world country, and everybody noticed her, and she's American on top of that, and there's an insurrection going on, and she was scared to death, but so brave. There's fear, and then there's courage. She had guts, and that impressed me. I mean, she hung in there. She absolutely hung in there, and there were attempts on her life. And I didn't have to make too much up. We really hit it off. I mean, she melted me. And I was there for her, which melted her. And just even the companionship, just to know that there's somebody that you can identify with, or somebody there for you, someone you can escape with. So that's where the chemistry came from. But there was a natural rapport. It was based on a natural rapport. There was enough commonality to expand on the differences. And if we had both been stubborn ideologues, we'd have never made it. That's the key. That is the beauty.
Well, you just said something really important. To know that there's somebody there for you is really important.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to ask Anne exactly that. I think Lucy must have felt the same way about Jake. But how did you create the humor? I cracked up so many times. She was so funny.
Oh.
And seemed... Yeah. How did you create the humor in the story with her and the fact that she was defending somebody in her family too?
Yeah. I've been writing humor forever. I mean, I had a column when I was a newspaper reporter that was called I Did, that was about the first year of marriage. I could write it now about the 40th year of marriage, too. But I think that you just kind of either have humor. I know that there are books about how to create it, but I'm not sure. I think you just kind of have to have a certain way of looking at the world. And with that book, that the opening in the other thing is, like, the opening with the child's ballet recital, I had that scene in my mind for the longest time before I ever wrote it in the book. And that's a natural humorous situation, you know, like Larry's got these really naturally dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you set it up, if you go to a child's ballet recital, it's going to be funny one way or another. And there are a lot of situations like that. And so you kind of look for a situation that naturally lends itself to that. But I just, that's sort of something that's been important to me as long as I can remember. So I'm not sure exactly how it happens, but you'll find it when you're writing dialogue, because you have it too. You have a sense of humor, and it'll
just come out
in that dialogue. Yeah, yeah,
That's the thing. I can talk and I can crack jokes and I am funny, and I've been through a lot of misery this year. So when you wrote about your ballet recital, I was thinking about the time I had to dance with a mop on my head because I was such a klutz, and my sister had the most beautiful ballerina outfit, and there I was sitting with a mop on my head pretending to be a broom or a mop in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and I'm going like, I know I can't dance, so they just stuck this real mop on my head and this other thing, and she's dancing around like, you know, Sugar Plum Fairy, and I'm going, this is just not fair. I didn't even want to do it. It was hilarious, but everybody.
It was hilarious, and a lot of times, I mean, it probably wasn't hilarious to you at the time.
No,
but
it wasn't.
I really wasn't
laughing.
No, but later, when you get a little bit away from it, It is funny, and things to do with kids are funny. I have a lot of kids in these books, and I think that they create a lot of humor, too. You know, just the way adults react to them and the way they react to adults.
Well, Doris, let's talk about Anthony, because I like him. He's dangerous.
I love it.
You created the murder mystery, so why did Dinah hate him after a while? What did she find out?
I don't know. I think to find out that someone's not exactly who you thought they were, and I think your imagination would just immediately run wild. It would.
Yeah.
I lived all my life in Tampa, and there was a huge mob presence in Tampa, and it's always interested me, and it's always intrigued me, and it's like, and that's the reason why I named Hypocrites what I did. It's because
I like that title.
Right? Mm-hmm. How we live our lives, how we treat each other, and because he's a guy from the neighborhood, and he's Italian, and it's like how tiresome it must be for some of those guys. It's like they have nothing to do with the mob, but they're just automatically assumed, you know, that they're part of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's just when you find out something about someone, they're not exactly what you thought they would, how you just instinctively think the worst. You just, your imagination is out there. That's where that went.
Kathy, how did you decide on the suspense or whatever in your stories too? And tell us about one of your characters so I can get to know them, because I intend to read one, definitely.
My favorite character is Duncan in the Aaron's Kiss series. He's he's a daywalker for the vampire, Aaron. And he's kind of a befuddled kind of honest person who you can't help but love him. He's kind of a little off. There's speculation on as to whether or not he's in love with Aaron and that's why he stays with him, but I've never ever put that out there. And each one of those series, he is instrumental in a lot of the things that are going wrong in the particular book. Like, he can bring two people together. In one particular book, there was someone was a computer expert, and he messed with his computer to bring the woman into the house so that she could meet them. And she says, she told him, you could have just, you know, called me and I could have walked you through this. And he goes, and what would have been the point? What would have been the point in that? So he's kind of sly, kind of befuddled, kind of loving, lovable guy.
When you call him a daywalker, is he a daywalker because he has red hair, or is that a different? Is that not the South Park type of daywalker?
Red hair.
Yeah, I mean in the TV show South Park, they call people with red hair daywalkers, but I guess it's a different.
Yeah,
different.
He's a daywalker because Aaron sleeps during the day and he watches over his household.
Okay, gotcha. Mm. That sounds more
and
reasonable.
And then when Aaron finds his mate, he takes care of the household then.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yeah, well, I've got another question. I've got tons of them. We've got about 24 minutes, which is great. I'm just trying to, you know, stall before I have to go into the Bronx. I'm not happy about this today. yeah, please.
You.
I get tortured. I'm not looking forward for, you know, to be tortured by anybody today, but, you know, this is too much. I'm having fun. This is great. Oh, by the way, I intend to do, I'm not doing any shows in December. We won't discuss why. But I've got two in January already. A French author from, going to talk to me about French writing and French mysteries and stuff and translations. Mm-hmm. And I've got a New York Times bestselling author of The Necessary Murder of Noni Blake by Terry Shams. I happened to sit in front of her at the Thriller Fest. She tapped me on the shoulder. And the book is fantastic. So I think I'm going to do another one of these in February.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys got to send me some more books so that we can have more people and have you guys on again, because this is great. I don't know why more people from Wild Rose Press haven't contacted me, but that's okay. So how did
they
create...
Well, I'm from the Wild Rose Press.
Yeah, all of you are, and I found you all by myself.
Yeah.
Yes,
and,
I love that.
Sylvie K. was the first person's book I've ever read. I love Sylvie. And she hasn't written anything. I don't know why. And I did read one other book, and it was just okay. I'm honest. Like, I have to say, my book reviews are straightforward and honest. They stand as rated and written. And I won't give a book. If I can't give a book at least 3.5-4 stars, I won't review it. I won't pan anybody's book.
And I'd like to say something about your review, if you don't mind praise. If you hate praise, then
I can
I'm
deal
not
with it.
What I really liked is, because once again we talked about sex scenes, I think about things, how do I want to present my story? You want it entertaining, etc.
Yeah.
You want it good rhythm, enough drama but not overkill, you know, etc., etc. And I put in my mind, just going by people's advice, too much philosophy occasionally, or too much history occasionally. People didn't say I did. I worry about it because this is what you hear not to do. But I want to do it so badly, I did it anyway. And you went through the whole book, and you absolutely liked the things I wanted people to like. It's like I paid you, as far as I was concerned. So there you go.
You did a wonderful job with the reviews.
Thank you. My mother used to tell me, don't write that the book is good or wonderful when you're doing a report. Look and see if you can figure out the message the author's trying to say.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think as a reading specialist,
I really appreciated that,
That's one of your questions is, like, what's the theme of your book? And, you know, that's an important thing. Your mother had it right, you know. What are you trying to say here?
My mother did, yeah. She would not, you know, a little girl in the bakery yesterday came up to me and she said, I hope you get me some children's books to read. The teacher always says, you know, I tell her the book is good, the book is wonderful. I said, Chloe, don't say the book is good or wonderful. Say the characters are interesting because. Or tell the teacher that you like a specific part of the book so that the teacher knows that you understand the book.
Because
I taught for a million years and book reports were it was oral book reports. I wouldn't let them write them. I wanted to see if they really read it. So when you're writing, are these standalones, or there's going to be a sequel to everybody's book?
Can I say one thing about the whole theme thing? I heard Jane Ann Krentz. I heard Jane Ann Krentz talking at a convention once, and she said everybody really has one theme. So if you look at the books you've written, you can usually find out what you're writing about. I mean, you're actually writing about the same thing over and over again in just different, you know, different situations. So we don't have that many stories inside of us. And I thought that was just interesting. And the theme is important, you know, the thing that you're, you know, what's going on underneath. So.
Well, you're writing characters in the series. Let me bring this question up. Because Kathy writes in the series, and you do, and Doris Might. How do you keep people wanting to read about that same character? Because I've read John Land's character tomorrow is Caitlin Strong, but he's got Michael Turiano. I can't wait for him to bring him back. He's really dangerous. I mean, I'm a reviewer, and I've read so many books, and I'll pick up his book, and I could have 40, and I'm going, okay, John wrote this? Okay, I'm going to put it to the top of my list. How do you keep a reader or a reviewer wanting to read your book in a series? Because sometimes the characters get stale, and sometimes they don't. Lucy's never going to get stale.
Right. No, I think it's really hard to keep write subsequent books if they're romances. I think romance, it has to resolve itself by the end of the book. So in a romantic series, usually the next book focuses on somebody else and their romance. I am writing a series of mysteries, and I have one detective, and she goes from book to book, and it's hard. I think it's real hard to keep it fresh and keep her interesting, and you know, and also if there's any romance in it, you can't resolve it, because then the next book, there's no romance, so.
So which would mean, would you guys ever write a book with an open-ended ending where it doesn't end?
No.
Not a romance.
Never is a big word, but I can't see it. But never is a big word. You never know.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Larry, what are you going to write next? What's next?
Well, I have another publication in that I had a gut feeling will get published, but I'm waiting to hear from my editor. And it's also based on a true story. Before I went to the Yom Kippur War in Israel, I'd just gotten out of the Marine Corps, and I was restless. And part of it is you want to find your head. That was a term we used back then. I don't want to overdramatize it, but I was kind of one of those guys looking for himself. I got to find my head type guy. And I retreated to this place I heard about from a friend in the Lake District of England, and I met a girl there. And so it is sort of a flashback from those days, and then our relationship was interrupted by the Yom Kippur War because I am Jewish, and I went. I wanted to go. So
my cousin was in that war, and I lost track of her after that. She joined the army. She married her captain. And see, Pora, I don't know what happened to her after that war. Yeah, so that
they
really
wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let
reading.
Me join. I did look into joining. Believe it or not, I looked into joining, but they were impressed that I was just out of the Marine Corps. But you don't just bop in the middle of a war and you know, et cetera. So I went as a non-combatant, just helping out wherever I could.
So Kathy, you write characters in the series too, right?
Right, but they're usually, it's like a family, and each book focuses on a member of the family.
Yeah,
that's what makes them interesting. That's what makes it better than most of the books in that particular genre. So, and Doris, are you going to bring Dinah back, or what's next for you?
My answer is like Anne's. I'm thinking about Frank. I think Frank is such an interesting character, and by the end of the book, I loved him, and I would probably do a prequel or a sequel on Frank.
Yeah.
They are family members, and I could bring Dinah and Anthony back in to pop in for a little bit. But I think Frank would make a great book.
I think I think readers really like that because, you know, when they finish the book, they miss those characters. And so even if they just show up in the next book, you know.
You get emotionally invested, right. You get to like your characters. You want to see them after the resolution of the book, living their lives. And you know, I think that makes it more interesting.
Well, before I forget, I just would like to offer anyone MJ7. MJ Magazine is my magazine in memory of my sister. It's for readers, writers, and it's got a speak out section. It's got my book reviews. People get stuck reading them. What can I say? My picks of the month. That's my weird sense of humor. This one, MJ7, is going to have poetry. And the reason why my in-laws and throw doctor is so nice to me is because the office manager's son is hot, and he's going to be on the front cover, and Chris's poems are going to be in my magazine, and they're really good. Otherwise, I wouldn't put them there.
I've got to see it.
Well, can you send us the link so that we can find it?
I'm going to send you guys later when I get back. I will send you a free copy of MJ6 so that you could read it. And if you have an article that you would like to share, we do politics, if you have an opinion. If you have an opinion on writing, if you have a writing tip, if you have anything that we want to speak out on, I speak out on just about anything that makes me happy. I just finished a really good book, before I forget. It's Caesar Salad, Chicken Caesar Salad for the Gay Soul by LaVon Gittin. it's not only is it great, it's phenomenal. He's a gay young man. He's absolutely amazing, and it's got a lot of research in it. Most of it is about research and biology, and what I really like is the fact that he has some anonymous bloggers that tell when they learn that they can come out, and some famous people that gave him permission to write some quotes. Plus, Leo the Lion that leads you through the book, and I didn't write the review yet. I'm going to do it later. I met him on the street. And he came up to me and asked me if I believed in gay rights. And I said, my cousin Andrea just got married to her girlfriend, Nicole, last week, seriously, at the Reagan Center.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm open-minded. And I was more than happy to read the book. It's fantastic. Everybody should read it. You'd understand a lot more about how they feel and what they go through. So that's one pick of the month. And Terry James, The Necessary Murder of Noni Blake, is really a murders with a twist. There's a whole bunch that I've read this week.
Wow.
And if you could, last question, if you could talk to your main character, what would they say are the pluses of your novel, and would they want to change anything?
I thought that was a pretty interesting question.
That's one of my sense of humor questions, people.
it's a good question, and I'd never thought of it that way. And you know, when you do think of it that way, you realize that maybe you haven't made your character as rounded as you could have, because it's hard to answer that question. And I had trouble with it. I decided that Jake would probably not want me to tell any more about him, you know, than I did tell, because he's kind of a man of few words. And and Lucy, I'm sure, would have more that she wanted to say, you know, because she's a woman of many words. But I'll be interested to hear what the other writers have to say to that question.
I thought it was very interesting question as well. I mean, I'm like, I don't know how to answer this. But I mean, I think if I was Dinah, I would say, was all this really necessary? You know?
Yeah.
You know, did I really have to go through all this? You know, and that was the only thing I could think of, was it like, you know, it took her around the block and back, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I don't
how
know
would
how
you
to
answer,
answer
that,
either.
Larry? Well, you're the character in the book, so you're happy with yourself.
Have you had any good answers to that question from any of the people you've interviewed?
Yes, well, I wrote, you know, mysteries and stuff like that. So I said, if the killer could speak to you, what would he say?
Uh-huh.
And probably, you know, well, I wish he didn't kill me off. I want to come back in the next one. I mean, if you're James Patterson, you know, you get an answer, but he doesn't do interviews. But he did like my last two reviews. I was like, oh my God, yes, that's great. I just finished Nicholas Sparks' See Me, and his publicist didn't realize that, you know, she's, oh my God, this is really good. They're tweeting, and he wrote a romance mystery too. So I don't know. I guess if your main character, you know, is happy with how you treated them, then they won't, you know, get upset with you. I know that John Land said that Michael Torriano, you know, he wants to come back faster because he's has a hotel, The Seven Sins, and I like the character because he's dangerous and he's not so good.
Yeah. Yeah,
so if you
yeah.
could change something about your character, would you make them a little more dangerous, a little more edgy in the next book if you brought them back?
Maybe so. That's a good point.
I'm sorry.
I'm just.
No,
go
I didn't know. I didn't know who you were talking to. Sorry.
That's okay. Anybody.
Yeah, I don't know. Right now, I've read my book several times, and I look for things. Should I have done this more? And actually, right now, I'm pretty satisfied with it as far as coming out of my own mind. I'm sort of waiting to hear what other people think and how might I have fine-tuned it if their, you know, praise or criticism is legitimate, et cetera. John Lennon said, reality leaves a lot to the imagination. And so that's sort of where I come from when I write. I start with reality, but I don't just leave it there.
Well, I do read books sometimes before they come out. When I get 5 minutes, yeah. I've done a few, and I read one, I won't tell the name of it, and unfortunately it was okay, it's just that it was based on a television program, and I specifically told the author of the book that it would never happen that way, and the main character, that would never happen that way. So I don't know if she's changing it or whatever, but I'm, you know, my opinion is my opinion, based on a Western that she was writing about the people that were actually in the Western, and I just felt that two of the characters would never do what she said. Seriously,
I think your opinion must be pretty valuable because you've read more than anybody I've ever met. I mean, you just read so many books.
I read everything except porn. I love children's books because my niece is Penelope. Takes everything out of my hand and says, I'll take that one next. I mean, she could just be standing there and taking it like, I want that. And I've sent for a couple of children's books. Yeah, I've read an awful lot of books. I like nonfiction once in a while, which is great. I'm reading Surrounded by Enemies by Brian Zappel. It's what would have happened if President Kennedy didn't die.
Oh.
And it's from his point of view and Robert Kennedy and how the situation was handled. I just started it, and it's interesting. Before we end, where can everybody get to know about all of you and read your books? And before I forget, if you guys send me another one, I am going to do another one of these on, I just put it in my calendar, February 10th is a Wednesday at 10 Eastern. It's just easier in the morning for me. So if you are interested, I can, and you send me another book, I would like to invite you all back on again because this has been the most fun I've had all year, seriously.
Thank you. Thanks for having
us. It sounds great to me.
Yeah,
this is
too.
Great. So where can we find out more about everybody, and where can we learn about you and your books? And I want the next few people.
I have a website. It's annyost.com. It's not interactive, so it's not very useful, but it, you know, it does outline all the books. And then Amazon, and then the two publishers, Wild Rose Press and Five Star, which is doing my mysteries.
Oh, I want copies of all of them because these are good.
I'll get you the large print.
Thank you, please. I know. The minute I see a book that has font that, you know, is larger, I go like, okay, you go to the top of my list, people. And then when I get ones with small print, it just takes me, I get eye strain. I won't read on my phone because I get eye strain too. Larry, where can we find out about you? Because your books are interesting too. And I've got people that whose hands are out ready to take these three from me. I can tell you now.
I hope so. My name is an easy name to remember, Larry Farmer, like Farmer in the Dell. And I have a webpage called Larry Farmer Writes, WRITES. Believe it or not, somebody actually thought RIGHTS. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, I don't mean to get into that. Larry Farmer Writes, WRITES.com. And it has all my links. It has my stories and about me, contact information, etc.
And what
Larry
about
LarryFarmerWrites.com.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I don't.
Where can we
I don't
find
have
out
a
about
yet. That's my next. That's my next thing is to get a website. But I am with the Wild Rose Press as well, and I do have my lovely reviews on Amazon. I appreciate that so much, Fran. And I'm Doris Cooper McCurry on Facebook, and at Writer Doris on Twitter.
Oh, do I have? Are you guys?
Me.
Are you one of my friends on Facebook? I hope.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Oh, good. And if anybody wants to send me an article for MJ8, MJ7 is not published yet, so if you send it to me really fast, I could put it in the one that's going to come out probably at the end of this month or next month. I'm just waiting for a couple of more articles to come in. And, Kathy, where can we learn about you? And, yeah, you got to send me one to read, seriously.
Just let me know which one you want, and I can do that.
Oh, I don't care. Just send me some. It doesn't matter. Send me something that's really good, that whatever you think
okay.
is great. I don't care.
What's your favorite character?
I have a blog page called Kathy S. Barton Author at blogspot.com. I'm also on Facebook. And, of course, World Castle Publishing.
Well, World Castle Publishing, I hope that Karen takes Faces 4, because Faces 4 is just about done. I just have to kill off one person. And, you know, somebody has to go. I'm sorry. It's very exciting. The story's called The Competitor. It's about baseball, and I wrote it with my 15-year-old nephew when he broke his hip. I decided that he wasn't going to become a couch potato, and I was going to keep his mind going besides homework.
What a good idea.
Amazing. Yeah, he was. We texted back and forth. We talked about it. And before I get it published, I want to make sure that Jake reads it, so that it reads the way he wants. But Faces Behind the Stone, Book 4, is called Hidden Truths and Lies.
By the way, Fran, my son is a baseball guru, a baseball genius. If you want him to critique your baseball, you got a great critiquer. He's critiqued professional athletes before and knew more
about them than they did. How about if he sends me a sports article? That would be fantastic. My nephew, DJ,
who killed me,
but I'm going to do this anyway. DJ is trying to become, he wants to become a general manager in sports, and he's got a blog called The Squirt Center.
So does my son.
Well, then, you know what? Ask him if he would like his articles published in MJ Magazine and send them to me this week, and I will get them in there because I'm dying for a sports section, people.
I owe you a lot of money, it sounds like.
No, you know what? My mother always said that the more you help people, when somebody in my family needs help, I could have 17 term papers to write, and she would turn around and say, you have to help your cousin write that because they need help. I go, Mama, I got 14 to write. Don't worry about it. They can't do it without your help. So 2 nights ago, my nephew texted me and said, are you into Common Core English today, or do I have to do it myself? And I go, I'm reading a book. Never mind. And I did. I'm really good at it, too. I was surprised. Oh, wow. So now that we know we can get to everyone and where we can find out about everyone, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And, Kathy, I will email you my address so that you could send me a book. And if it's in large print, it moves to the top of my list, people. Seriously. And on February 10th, I hope that everyone will rejoin me for Romance Wednesday. And if I'm feeling up to it in December, we'll see what happens. And I want to thank everyone for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much.
And
whoever's got a new book, please make sure that I get it. So that I get it before February so I could read it and give it those 5 golden stars they deserve.
So you'll send us all your address.
If you send me the articles, I will send them to my publisher today.
Sure. Thank you.
And everybody have a great day. The sun is shining, and I'm not looking forward to what I'm about to do, but you know what? What can I say?
Know.
Have a great day, and thank you so much, and bye.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.